The Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
From a nightclub at the end of the world. Hey everybody, it's Michael. Michael Rupert again, I'm back. It is Sunday, November the 6th, 2011. It's kind of an ominous Sunday for me. I mean, it's kind of like right in time with setting the clocks back an hour this morning. It's dark outside, it's winter time, it's that time of the year. And it feels like that's settling down in a lot of places. Just before the show, Gary had made some comments about some of the pseudo press releases that are being released about Europe. Nobody has taken any of those seriously at all. At CollapseNet all week, we have been running stories that just clearly demonstrate that it is abundantly clear that the European Union is dead, and that's simple, and it's very easy to understand why. There are not enough physical resources to provide the kind of economic growth and consumption that is required to service the debt that's already out there. Growth has stopped all over the planet. The Reuters headline tonight on the Reuters homepage, and Reuters is, you know, this is like reading a BBC broadcast out of London during the Blitz. Markets abandoning hopes for lasting Eurozone solution. After another week of confusion and turmoil in Europe, investors are ditching whatever hopes they once had for a conclusive solution to the debt crisis. And there's something very funny tonight. We have a whole bunch of stories that are documenting this. Europe is done, but in an act of complete desperation that's almost comical, the G20 asked Germany to pledge its gold for the EFSF, European Financial Stability Facility Rescue Fund. The Bundesbank refuses, grateful for the arrogance. What a joke. Hey, Germany, put up your gold for this. Sure, everybody'd love to get. I mean, this is just, I wrote about this perhaps a year ago when the first smoke signal started going up that that the EU was in trouble, the euro was in trouble, and it came from Greece then, which is what I said in the movie Collapse. But I said it was a mistake, it was a mistake, it was a mistake to try to bind the euro together by expending more energy to bring more nations in to make people go in deeper, because things break down, not up. They break apart. They don't get bigger. And what I wrote with it, all the energy being put into trying to save the euro was not only a waste of resources, it was going to make everything a lot worse when it happens, and that sure does look like what's going on now. Hey, Germany, just pledge your gold for this hopeless pyramid scheme that nobody believes in, that they're going to try to base on assets that nobody wants to buy. So anyway, that's what's going on tonight, and stories coming out over the week that the Super Committee is accomplishing nothing. And that if they don't accomplish anything within, I think it's 2 weeks, the automatic budget cuts will be triggered, $1.3 trillion more than that, but they're going to fall brutally on, now most of the unemployed people out here have lost all their benefits now anyway. We had that story up today. Poverty's at all-time highs. So, you know, there's, so what's going to get cut is, roads, bridges, government subsidies or payments to cities, counties, and states, you know, the locals are hanging on for, and we're going to see really, really bad, devastating consequences from that. And of course, there is no city anywhere, I don't think, in this country that doesn't have some kind of exposure to Greece. Because they're in mutual funds, they're in all this miasma of derivatives out there that is just imploding. So that's continuing, and it's been a sad and a hard week. I'm deeply involved in Occupy Santa Rosa, and there was another vet beaten very seriously in Oakland this week. He's an Army Ranger, I'm told, named Kayvan, K-A-Y-V-A-N, Sabegi, S-A-B-E-G-I. It's an unconfirmed report I have from Kevin, who's a former Special Forces medic, who is our medic at Occupy Santa Rosa, that Rangers at Fort Lewis, and again, this is unconfirmed, but Kevin's a good solid guy, and he would know, have refused to serve until Sabegi is returned to them. I don't know his status. Maybe someone who does may email in tonight or give us a call and let us know. But they wanted him back in their care. He was beaten so badly his spleen ruptured, which is very messy. That's releasing like bile loose inside. And he was in a cell for 18 hours and couldn't walk when he was released. And that's stirring a lot of response throughout the veterans community. But we have seen the Occupy movement get darker this week. The Switch Your Bank movement, Change Your Bank Day, was a pretty much raging success. We had a lot of demonstrations. I was glad to see Jesse Jackson out at one occupying a bank. And the story also said that he has asked to spend the night at Occupy Atlanta. And that's how you establish credentials around here. You come out and sleep out and hang out, and you do the thing with everybody else. And there's room for a lot of people here, so... High five, Jesse. You know, anybody who can join in, this is a wide open thing. Nobody's taking control of it, and that's a beautiful thing. So at Occupy Santa Rosa, we also have some tension building. And next Monday, there's a meeting with the city manager, a police lieutenant, and some officials about whether the city is going to let Occupy Santa Rosa stay on the city hall. Property. We have refused to go through a process to obtain camping permits because we will not accept anything with an end date on it. There is no end date on life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. There was no end date on the civil rights movement. There was no end date on the suffrage movement. There was no end date on the movement to abolish slavery. There's no time limit on our liberty. That's a clear consensus. So Tuesday there is a vote before the city council in Santa Rosa, and I'll be speaking there along with some other people. This is my home, and we don't know what's going to happen, but it looks like we can probably expect that there will be a vote to remove us by force. And I will say that. I'm very honored to be in the company of some veterans, and we have all joined and agreed to put our bodies in between the police if any violent attacks, as we have seen, such as some of those we have seen, take place on nonviolent, unarmed people. So it's kind of like high noon now. But that's what it's come down to. There is no more time, and I think we're all starting to understand that now. I think that's becoming very clear. November 9th, this week, they're having some test of a new national emergency broadcast system, which has me paying attention. I wonder what's coming up with that. And in the meantime, the tension does appear to be building. I want to read something that I got from a regular listener to our show. We know him as Windermere Assassin. I know him on Facebook as Lee Deathcare Nelson, and he's been at St. Paul's in London, where the Occupy movement there has forced the Church of England to do some soul-searching. Does it serve God? Does it serve Mammon in the form of the City of London Corporation? And this brings up some of the same issues that I brought up morally that police officers face. There is a question now between doing the legal thing and doing the right thing. And the right thing is not found in a rule book. The right thing is found in your heart. But he sent this report from St. Paul's today. It started off with a trouble-free journey down to London, St. Paul's. We arrived on site in good spirits and spent a few minutes soaking up the atmosphere. I had a chance to grab coffee and join the General Assembly. Excuse me. We, along with the rest of the people there, were given an introduction to the various hand signals and gestures that are needed to help the meeting run smoothly. It's fun to watch this work. It was inspiring to have a talk, from some guys from Egypt who came to show support for what Occupy was doing, and to hear from a representative to give us an update on the two boats of activists that were taken into custody by the Israeli Navy for trying to take medical supplies to the people of Gaza. Then there was an announcement that a march was about to take place, and we decided to join the walk to Parliament. We seemed to be liked by the various general public and tourists as they lined the streets to watch us as we walked by. I carried a sign with a quote from Mike Rupert, thank you, saying, "Until you change the way money works, you change nothing." And I paid attention to the people lining the streets as they looked and read the sign, and often saw them nod in agreement to what they had just read. I made sure I held the sign high in the air, posing for those who wanted to photograph of it, and paraded it along the tourist buses like a boxing ring girl as the tourists filmed and photographed us. Good job. We started noticing things as we were right at the back of the march, in front of the police vans, cars, and officers that followed us as we brought the center of London to a standstill. Things like groups of police officers charging down the streets trying to get ahead of the march, and all the while we tried to engage with them. I was saying, 40,000 police officers, your colleagues, are being made redundant, and we are doing this for you too. But we never got any sort of reply back, and they just ignored us. Except one, my partner Allison, said to a group of officers who were ignoring our attempts to be friendly, "When I was in the force, we engaged with the public," to which one officer looked at her in a sarcastic, cocky way, said, "Well done, you. Well done, you." So that was it. I told him there was no need for this mouth. It doesn't matter if you wear a badge or not. Your total disrespect is going to get you in a lot of trouble before backing down and releasing and realizing that he was getting what he wanted, a reaction. As we continued along after leaving my Mr. Attitude behind us, I ended up walking alongside two Metropolitan Police and heard their radios come alive as the woman on the other end instructed the officers that should we end up in Parliament Square, then we would be arrested. I passed the message to the other protesters who went racing ahead to spread this information, and as we rounded the last corner onto the road that would take us to Parliament, we stopped and turned to go back after agreeing we didn't want to end up at Parliament Square knowing what was waiting for us. As we turned to walk in the opposite direction, the line of police that had been following us now stood with their arms out and were pushing back others in our little group at the back of the march. We explained we were turning back to leave, and they stood and stopped us, instructing us to join the rest of the guys that were starting to be kettled at the front of the march. A young girl who stood behind the police was pushed through the police line to join us on the other side of the line, to which she complained and tried passively to pass by the officers in the line. One police officer grabbed the girl by her upper arms and pinned her against a fence, to which we all started to protest that there was no need for such physical force and that the officer was committing an assault. Allison started filming at this point, and I tried to push by, but the police pushed me back, stating we were committing a breach of the peace for failing to obey the officer's commands. I blatantly informed them that they were provoking us, we had done nothing wrong, and that we weren't wanting to join the rest of the kettle protesters, and it began to get heated with me and the police, and then our chance came. The officers touched their ears as they listened to their radios, and something was obviously happening towards the front of the kettled marchers, and the police blocking our way charged off. We got out of there quick and headed back to St. Paul's, all the while coming across people who had heard something was happening and came to look. So we rounded up everyone we could, and we informed them to stay out of the area. So there we are. We went and experienced the fantastic atmosphere at St. Paul's, got a taste of a police state at the same time. Glad we went, but not so happy about leaving all those wonderful people at St. Paul's and those we marched with to the mercy of the police. I see this ending nasty, sorry to say, but having witnessed it firsthand, I can say that. That was beautifully written, Lee. I really appreciate you taking the time to send that in. That's on Facebook, and I wanted to share that with you guys tonight because, yes, it is getting dark out, and it is looking like tension is building increasingly. And I am concerned that there will be much more violence directed toward the occupiers all over the country and around the world. What Lee described is eerily similar. We haven't had the same experiences in Santa Rosa, at Occupy Santa Rosa, but it describes a feeling that is deeply profound, and from what I sense reading around, is pretty common now throughout the movement. And I must salute everybody. If you go to the Occupy Santa Rosa camp, it's spit shine. There is not a speck of trash anywhere. We are living in the spaces in between the ones and zeros of Cartesian tyranny, and it's driving the powers that be crazy. And we are hoping for this moment of clarity that may come. We hope will come before everything goes to shit. No other way to put that. So anyway, there's a good chance that I'll be in jail next week. If this happens Tuesday or Wednesday, I and some of the vets are going to be there, are planning on being out, and we're planning on getting arrested. We don't know how it's going to turn out, but you know what? There is no other time to do this stuff now. This is the time when those kinds of things are called for. It's sad, but we're all pleased to be in the company of really honorable men and women out here just doing some wonderful things, and we will not lift a finger to harm anybody or anything. So going into that, I've been craving a song for quite a while now, and it's a song that I really need to remind myself to play. And if I get arrested or hurt out there, you know, it might be the last song I get to play for a while, and I haven't heard it. It's the song we open the show with every week, and it's a reminder that tonight is Sunday night. It's not Monday, and we've got time to play and enjoy each other, and I'm going to do that for a second. We'll be back right after Avalanche and Earthquake.
Time to breathe today. It's
avalanche and earthquake, new white trash. I wrote that song with Mr. Doug Lewis, an amazing guy, a good friend of mine who has relocated out of Venice, California. He's now on some land in Colorado, hanging in there, doing well. So is his dog Squishy. And Andy Kravitz of New White Trash had a piece of that song too. And that's the one I'd like to be remembered for anyway. And I was glad to share that with you. Okay, we're back. NewWhiteTrash.com if you want to find more about the band and the music. We've got some emails coming in a couple minutes before station break. It's kind of interesting being here in Sebastopol in Sonoma County, which is a special place in the country and in the world because of the collection of people and groups and entities here that are so totally into sustainable living. Transition U.S. is headquartered here. Very active transition movement throughout the region, but the region is also full of permaculture. There are tons of Collapse Net members here. Richard Heinberg lives in Santa Rosa, and I ran into Richard at the Occupy Santa Rosa camp the other day. And I'm going to bring this up at the city council meeting on Tuesday night, and I'm going to point out that, you know, we're here because of what's happening, and this is the best place in the world, and as things continue to deteriorate, what we have and who we have close to us are going to be all we have to work with. And I was at a breakfast, Trayson Heckman, who's with Transition U.S., been a guest on this show, had a breakfast for his for his operation, Daily Acts, and there was 1,000 people at this breakfast. I don't know, maybe 800. There were a lot. I mean, it was huge. And these are all people who get this, and they're all, not all of them, but a good many of them are deeply involved in supporting Occupy Santa Rosa, so I hope that there's some common sense in city government. And maybe, you know, other governments around the world watching what's going on to understand that local governments need to start making friends among the people. And really looking out for their interests, because they're going to be stuck with each other and it needs to be a good marriage. That being said, when we come back after the station break, I'm all yours. We've already got some emails coming in. If you got something you want to talk about tonight, email me directly at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com, or you can call in at 1-888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. We'll get to you after the station break here at the Lifeboat Hour on the Progressive Radio Network .com or PRN.FM. We'll be back after this.
It feels like the ride is head on to the end. Fuel gauge is broken and your tires worn and thin. And your back's up against the wall again. You're the new white trash. You're the new white trash. When everyone, everywhere is running for cover. When bonuses and bailouts are feeding bottom suckers. And your back's up against the wall again. You're the new white trash. You're the new white trash.
Leave your keys, you ain't coming back. Welcome back to the Lifeboat Hour. I'm Michael Rupert. We're on the Progressive Radio Network, and it's Saturday, the 6th of November. Got an email in from, hold on, I got to expand the screen, from Bill. Mike, do you anticipate OWS devolving into full-blown riots soon due to either provocateurs or brutal police? Well, let me start off answering that by telling you that, you know, there's a lot of things that that I don't agree with Michael Moore about. And he said recently that anytime you see an anarchist out there, you know, somebody in a mask, it's automatically the police. And I'll tell you, that's not true. There are real live anarchists out there. I disagree with them. I disagree with their philosophy. I disagree with their tactics. And I think that if some of them are out involved starting this, starting these violent confrontations, that they ain't helping nothing. But it's very clear from the stuff that I've been reading that that none of the major violence that has occurred around Occupy Wall Street has been instigated by Occupy Wall Street. There's a very clear perception, and I think it's a very clear public perception. That it's and it's correct that you know it's these outsiders. We have some around Occupy Santa Rosa. Their kids, they're young and they're wearing, you know, bandanas and kerchiefs, and their faces are covered up, And they make everybody nervous. But we've made it clear to the cops. They've been taunting cops here, which I disagree with, doing traffic stops and moving on the sidewalks, encroaching from behind the officers, taunting. And that's not us. And they scare us, and they also scare the police. I don't think that we can say that full-blown riots will happen universally. I think this is now a time when truly some places where there are stronger bonds between the police and the community and a clearer understanding may avoid this. And I am desperately hoping for that in Occupy Santa Rosa. But I do see the pressure building for violence, and not all police are brutal. Some have been unbelievably brutal. Some have been criminal. I formed this opinion in my head. There's a California Penal Code section 148 PC, which is interfering with a police officer and the lawful performance of his or her duties. It's a pretty serious charge. What I'm seeing, too, also is that whenever arrests are made of Occupy members, the bails are really high. Something everybody should plan for if you're going to get arrested, high bails. Where was I? 148 PC is interfering with a police officer in the performance of lawful duties. Now, it will never be and cannot be ever lawful for a police officer to use force on an unarmed, unresisting, unthreatening civilian who is exercising his or her right to freedom of speech and freedom of assembly. That's not lawful duty. And I'm going to say clearly in the city council meeting that I'll speak for myself, and if some of the other guys want me to say it for them too, I will, that none of us will lift a hand to hurt any police officer. We will merely put our bodies in between an unjust attack, because that's a matter of honor with us. But I'm afraid. Yes, I am afraid of increasing violence, and I think the economic news this next week, especially the next 2 weeks, as we come up on the deadline for the super committee, is going to. I'm just afraid of a spark right now. Really, I am. Pumpkin's Daddy. That's a cool name. All right. I live in Springfield, Mass, and after this last storm, we lost power for a week. It was amazing how much people freaked out over gas and food. Thanks to you, I was ready. My family can't really get it yet, but I'm trying to get my wife somewhat ready, but it's hard for her to realize what's coming. But thank you, Mike. If it wasn't for you, I don't think I'd make it in the end. Thanks from Keith, from Massachusetts. Thank you, Keith. I appreciate that. Let's see. He brings up an amazing point here that we need to focus on, which is that none of the damage, or very little of the damage, from Hurricane Irene has been repaired yet. FEMA was broke, and this, there was some temporary funding passed, but there's been no stories about that. Now we have had the serious snowstorm, the SNAP snowstorm, which is still leaving, I think, there are 50, 60, 70,000 people still without power. But this is what we have to prepare for, and this is happening increasingly. If you want to see what it's going to be like, we can look at Pakistan and we can look at India, both of which are having major prolonged blackouts, power outages, no food, fuel. They're running out of coal for electrical generation. We had this story that India was running 60,000 diesel generators when the blackouts hit the Taj Mahal. But the generators put out so much pollution that you couldn't see it anyway, and the pollution is damaging this priceless piece of architecture. Whatever it takes to get people's attention, that's fine. And Keith, I'm really glad that you were prepared. And for those of you out there who haven't started yet, there is still time. There is still time. You won't be the slowest camper. Chip Thomas writes in, a slogan popped into my head the other day that might be appropriate for the occupiers, maybe even a philosophy the whole world should adapt. Maximize sustainability, not profits. Thanks for keeping us enlightened. Well, yeah, but then I want to stay away from having to define all that. certainly that is probably an excellent description of what a fundamental part of the new human paradigm will look like or will include as its foundation. But I don't even think the word profit is going to exist if post-petroleum human evolves, as we hope it will. I hope that we will be living in an economic paradigm that doesn't measure profit. It measures happiness, that measures balance and a good life that's really possible. Pablo Panero writes in, "Hi, Mike. First of all, I'm glad you North Americans woke up finally." Well, us gringos are slow, what can I tell you? "The revolution will not succeed without you guys. We know that. It won't succeed without all of us. Just one question. I've been paying attention to what William Engdahl said about the EU staying military in the Middle East, and this is the position in case there's a future war with China or Russia. Your opinion." Estados Unidos, okay, EE. I saw EE.UU, that's Estados Unidos. We have committed, Pablo, the U.S. has committed, President Obama, to remove all U.S. military personnel from Iraq by December 31st. That's something I follow very closely. We follow a collapse net on the World News Desk because it's a serious sticking point. We do not know how it's going to play after December 31st. There's a lot of contractors that are going to be left behind at the largest. The embassy is as big as Vatican City and at three super bases in Iraq. That'll be private contractors, some trainers. It all depends on what Muqtada al-Sadr, a Shia cleric who runs the Mehdi army, will put up with. And we're seeing some violence still running up to that. There have been some bombings throughout Iraq. We also have Afghanistan, and which is an absolute nightmare right now. Very bloody, very violent. Saudi Arabia is about to have a succession to a new king. Prince Nayef has moved into the first in line, crown prince status, after the death of Sultan. And he's a hardliner. He's been a very conservative guy. So there's the Middle East, as Zbigniew Brzezinski wrote, or as I wrote in Crossing the Rubicon, as so many people have written, is like one of many places. But it's probably the most important because of the energy that's there. 25%, 60% of the known oil on the planet's in the Middle East. That we are all susceptible to. I don't think the U.S. empire has the wherewithal to really maintain a presence there much longer, and I think that's going to change very quickly. We're looking at rapid tectonic changes around the world in a very short period of time, starting right now. From Jonathan in Philadelphia. Hi, Jonathan. Mike, I went down yesterday. Hold on, let me make sure I haven't got it. Okay, I went down yesterday to check out the Occupy Philly movement. It's very positive, yes, very peaceful, great, and the energy was great. The city says they have to be out in a few weeks or so, but they claim they are not leaving and they are as serious as nails, as are we all, brother. Do you think that they will try to infiltrate the movement with police, try and make it look like they are causing problems? Not just in Philly. Okay. From what I have witnessed firsthand, and from what I'm picking up, I don't think that provocateurs are having too much success of any kind at all within the movement. There's the consciousness is so clear. We smile. We keep the campus crystal clean. We don't break the laws. And nobody. I'm not seeing anybody get any traction with that anywhere inside. The Occupy movements. Some people have pushed the envelope, I'm sure, in some cities. I'm not saying that, all the but that's why they have laws and people get arrested. But I'm not as worried about provocateurs disrupting things within the movement in terms of making the movement do things to get it in trouble. I am seeing some amazingly stubborn personalities that always seem to be able to disrupt the meeting, but I guess we have those, I think, pretty much everywhere. But that's not, no, I'm more worried about just direct assaults on the movement unprovoked. There's too many instances of that being described around the world. We have from Mind Control for the TV set. Oh, let me check this out before I read it. Hold on a minute. Okay, great. Hi, Mike. I've been following alternative media since I canceled my local cable service about 8 months ago. My mind has exploded with an insatiable desire to learn how the world really works. Since then, my eyes are open and I'm trying best to inform everyone around me. Can you please address technology that I know has been fed into mainstream TV news and entertainment programming? When I try to wake up relatives and friends, they become noticeably irritated and do not want to hear it. I know it sounds crazy, but when I'm at my relative's house and they have the cable on, I feel incredibly drained and irritated. It's almost like I turn into a zombie. Thanks for keeping up the good work. Christine. Yeah, no, Christine, I get that totally. I mean, I have to, when I watch mainstream media now, it's like I have to prepare myself. And usually all I watch is a movie or something, or if I have to check some news. But it has become like fingernails on a chalkboard. And I think that brings us to one of the biggest things that is such a part of this infinite growth paradigm, which is commercial advertising. It is so nauseating. It is so disgusting to even try to tolerate the commercials that are played now. And I'm aware that, a lot of people are reacting to it this way, and there's nothing you can do with the people who don't want to hear it yet, you know. Trust me, having been one of the ones who started when there weren't, virtually nobody was paying attention, we're overjoyed at all the people who are now paying attention and awake and out. But everybody I know feels that way. Anytime the TV's on, and especially anytime it's commercial television, yuck. Okay, now we got a little break. 1-888-874-4888 if you want to call in. What I think I might do tonight is take a look. I've been telling you that every day I get one from Jenna Orkin and from Rice Farmer in Japan, a set of stories that we cull from around the world through methods we've developed starting over the last decade. And I just got before the show tonight a list of the stories that are going to be up tomorrow, and I thought I might take a look through there for some of them because it's just amazing lessons from these stories. Pakistan rebuts report on movement of nukes. There was a very interesting story that we had on the World News Desk this week. It said that they had photographs. The Pakistani government, as a security measure, had its nuclear warheads in unmarked vans that they were moving around from parking lot to parking lot, which is just, Pakistan is a failed state. The power shortages are just out of control. Major blackouts, Karachi, Peshawar, all of the major cities short of power. Industry shutting down, railroads shutting down because they don't have energy to run the trains, and nuclear weapons. And this brought me back this week to my clear understanding that probably the most important issue that if I could get all of mankind on one page would be that we have to shut down all nuclear reactors on the planet safely in the cold shutdown, really cold shutdown, while we still have the technical ability to do that. We had stories of this week that Fukushima, the radiation levels were 30 times higher than what the government had admitted. And Japan, of course, is still suffering from that, and we got to worry about those things. But so we have nuclear warheads and unmarked vans being parked in parking lots in Pakistan. That's comforting. There has been a lot of buzz lately about an attack on Iran. With in the U.S. press and the British press, British government supposedly moving to authorize or help in the largest training exercise ever conducted with Israel and the United States is underway. And I got to tell you that I'm in the same place with this that I have been since about 2001 or 2002, when folks like Alex Jones were, fanning the flames on this. And it was clearly a piece of bad disinformation, a total red herring. And the reason why is that in order to attack Iran, Israeli and American aircraft would have to fly over either Saudi airspace or Iraqi airspace with permission. you can't overfly without permission, and that's the only way that an air attack on Iran can take place. And as soon, with Iran being a major oil producer, as soon as Iran was attacked, China would be in the fray, backing Iran, because China now has a state-owned oil refinery in Iran. China's invested, I think, $400 or $500 billion in Iran. That they built Iran a refinery that's now producing gasoline. But the world cannot do without Iranian oil. Again, even though they're really sounding this trumpet a lot, I really don't expect an attack on Iran to take place. But Israel, their main airport, their main labor union is going to shut down the airport in Tel Aviv on Monday. That's pretty interesting. You're going to love this. I just couldn't believe. All right. Thieves attempt to steal Ronald Reagan statue in Newport Beach. Hey, now we can all laugh at that, right? Melt old Ronnie down. It's a $60,000 statue, and it sustained damage. They broke the statue. It's tilting for the scrap metal of Ronald Reagan's statue. Well, you have to have the sense of humor through all of this. China now is having very, very serious economic problems, as we've been covering for you on the World News Desk. China's going down as fast as everything else is, and yes, I do still think that this is all being coordinated. But here's a story from opening this now. It's China, Bloomberg. China credit squeeze prompting suicides, along with offer to sever a finger. This is a bad movie. This is just a really bad movie. China money rate drops most in 3 weeks on cash injection. Chinese cities fret as land sales fall. China's vanishing factory bosses, mob justice probably. U.S. hit with big withdrawals. Fed sells assets, borrows cash. Yeah, there's some really nasty stuff coming with the Fed. I'm still outraged over the fact that Bank of America transferred $53 trillion in fraudulent derivatives to the deposit side of its book so that the FDIC could bail them out. That's just outright theft. Earthquakes in England, Oklahoma, all over the world being attributed to fracking. Remember fracking? Yeah, we don't care. We got to have that energy. We'll just shift the whole earth around to do that, and it's really getting out of hand. I mean, major quakes in Britain, a 4.6 in Oklahoma. Give me a break. We had one in Virginia this year, Arkansas, and yet they're still trying to sell us the clean gas thing. It's unbelievable. Okay, let's see what else we got. All right, that's an overview of what's coming in on the World News Desk tomorrow. Again, I'm waiting this week for developments, and I really have to say that all the hairs up on the back of my neck this week. It just feels heavy, and it feels like there's some major events coming. I have to sit back again. I was emailing David DeGraw, who was he's been on the show. He's AMP status, and he was one of the original organizers of Occupy Wall Street, and he was flying into L.A. to speak at Occupy L.A., which I thought was great. And I was sharing with him that I'm meeting some of the most amazing people in the world that I've ever met in the Occupy movement, with a clear consciousness and an attitude that is just getting this stuff done, and it's been very joyful hanging around with these people as things get done around the camp. I'm going to be out at the camp a couple times this week before we find out if we're going to get bulldozed off Tuesday or Wednesday. Wednesday, I guess. But I encourage you. And what I'm seeing too is from West Sonoma County, a lot of food from all around Sonoma County. A lot of homegrown organic food is turning up at Occupy Wall Street. So what we have here, also evolving with the Occupy movement, is I made this observation, and a whole bunch of people smiled. this is great training for what it's going to be, how we're going to survive after collapse. And everybody went, of course. You know, the food's being shared, resources are being shared, there's no competition. I have yet to see any money change hands anywhere in the camp, and yet the camp at Occupy Santa Rosa is 50% larger than it was last week. People keep coming, and it's grass growing up to the sidewalk. And that's encouraging. So we hope in the days that are coming ahead for a miracle, for everybody to realize that it's not about doing the legal thing. It's not about defining things in terms of old paradigm. It's about doing the right thing. The right thing. And if everybody just goes into their heart and does the right thing, then nobody will get hurt. Nobody needs to get hurt. We do not need to be fighting each other, especially in local venues where it's local police against local residents. That's, you know, to all city managers, to all state and local politicians, and I know you guys listen, both Rubicon and Confronting Collapse have been bestsellers in Amazon's public affairs and politics section, and I know you guys are reading this. We have each other, and I wrote Confronting Collapse, my latest book that came out with the movie, really looking to address the needs of city and county governments. The 25 points that I put in were focused on strengthening that, because that's all we're going to have left. It is obvious to everyone that the United States government is totally incompetent, it is totally corrupt, and it is totally not responsive. And as you go from the larger to the smaller, we understand really clearly that our last line of defense before collapse gets too far out of control is state and local government. And I would hope, I would pray that the Occupy movement somehow finds a way to build bridges between the occupiers and city government, because in the end, we're going to be stuck with each other anyway. We're not criminals. We don't, we're you. We are the 99%, and all city managers out there are the 99%. And we need not to be divided now at this point. I'm very happy to see a lot of color showing up throughout the movement, a lot of souls that I've been talking about. And I guess I just have my fingers crossed. What do you say, man? What do you say? I don't know if I'll be back next week. You know, I may be in the Hooskow. I may be injured, or something else may happen. And this is the time that we've come to. Now, as far as CollapseNet goes, and I'll shut up with this, I'm doing a tape next week for our CollapseNet members only. And this has to do with surviving in a very unstable economic environment where you don't know what's going to be happening a week or 10 days ago. Netflix recently lost 800,000 subscribers. That has hit us at CollapseNet too. We have had about 1,500 of our members write in lamenting even, you know, 27 cents a day or less. They could not afford to stay, but they loved it. They love CollapseNet, and we've been carrying them. We've also given several hundred complimentary memberships away. That's increasing as we give them out to key people in the Occupy movement, people who don't have the money but who definitely benefit from what we do at CollapseNet. We're now in 68 countries. But, I mean, if I was out to make money, I could easily charge $1,000 a year, and I know that there's a core of 2,000 people out there who are very influential people in the world who would pay that if I was out to make money. But CollapseNet is so valuable to so many people on so many levels, and we give a lot away free. But we're going to have to find a new way to operate, and I'm going to be doing a tape next week to our members who have been with us for a long time, those who do have the means and who do appreciate what we do, that you're going to have to send us some money. We've had eight direct DDoS attacks in the past week. Those are increasing. We expect that, but it is taking increasing amounts of time from our IT personnel. And we expect those to continue, and we have to find a way to keep this going. There's no way to build a model now. And I guess what I'm going to do is I'm going to make CollapseNet available to live in a gift economy, to start to live in a gift economy, and see how that works, because I watch it working at the Occupy movements, at the encampments all over. And this gift thing is very special. It's very important. But we have to do that, because I would like to keep us going as long as possible. You need us now, but what we all know is that this is it. This is high noon. This is almost the stroke of midnight for the collapse of human industrial civilization. Not a cheery thought, but I played Avalanche and Earthquake. I'm feeling better. I'll be back next week. We've got some more guests coming up. I'm going to leave it open for next week, just to see what develops during the week. But we'll be back with you, God willing, and the river don't rise on the Lifeboat Hour next Sunday on the Progressive Radio Network. Good night.